A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
concentrate
on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 293. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, or British fantasy television in this case. And today we are talking about The Chronicles of Narnia. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we are in the sort of fantasy area of our chosen genre here. Because we are looking at the BBC's take on C.S. Lewis's classic Narnia books. We are looking at 3 series. Each one is 6 30-minute episodes from 1988, 1989, and 1990. And it is a sort of golden age of Sunday tea time storytelling from the Beeb. And I don't think I'm giving too much away to say that this one, certainly in the UK, Brian, has a huge and very fond remembrance and reputation.
Yes, this is very fondly remembered from the time, for sure. It's a much-loved series, I think. And it also, as we'll get to over the course of things, it was a very big deal at the time. These were big productions for the BBC in the late 80s and into 1990.
Yes, indeed they were.
So we should get into the setup and some of what we're talking about here, although it is very familiar. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe begins with the 4 Pevensey children. Pevensey is their last name. These 4 siblings being evacuated from London to this country house, the home of Professor Kirk. This is set during World War II, so they're being evacuated for safety reasons. And they, of course, discover this strange wardrobe filled with old fur coats, and it conceals a doorway to the magical fantasy land of Narnia.
And straight away, I mean, everybody, as you say, Brian, is probably familiar with the first, the subject and the story of the first book. But, you know, that magical moment when the youngest child breaks through into Narnia. How many of us as kids heard the stories and then went tapping away at wardrobes ourselves?
Absolutely. This is classic children's literature here, and it's very well known, but of course we have to talk about it.
And of course we have to talk about the fact that when they first arrive in Narnia, it is not the green and pleasant land. It is a land under the grip of the wicked White Witch, a land where it's always winter but never Christmas. And of course, for Narnia, we are going to encounter, or rather the children will encounter, the full range of magical creatures. There'll be talking animals. And if we're talking about animals with the power of speech, the most famous of them all, the lion himself, Aslan.
And under the direction of Aslan, the 4 Pevensey siblings become key figures in the battle to break the White Witch's spell and to reclaim Narnia for good and for Aslan's group and for the talking animals and so on.
Yes, and I mean, we have got a lot of ground to cover here, as you say, Brian, so that we're almost giving the individual series short shrift in a way. But that was the first one, Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. It was told over 6 episodes in 1988. And I'm going to guess that there can't be too many people who don't know the story from the first book, at least, Brian. I know when we get to some of the other books, perhaps people aren't quite as familiar with them. But The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, as you say, an absolute classic of children's literature. You know, a much loved story around the world.
And if you know that story, then you know the story of this television serial, because it really follows that British tradition, and especially the BBC tradition, of staying very close to the source material whenever they can. And this certainly stays very close to the book in its storytelling. So there are lots of characters over the 4 books. but we want to mention a number of them. The original group of children from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. These four Pevensey siblings, the older two are Peter and Susan, played by Richard Dempsey and Sophie Cook. And they are sort of the leaders of the group of them in a way, with Peter as the eldest and Susan being the sort of voice of reason and the rational one often. The younger two, Edmund, who is the disbeliever, if you like, and the one that breaks apart from the group at a couple of points and in some different ways. Edmund, played by Jonathan Scott, and the youngest, Lucy, played by Sophie Wilcox. And Lucy, of course, is the first to find her way into Narnia through a game of hide and seek, finding this wardrobe.
And of course, we've got characters who are voiced by actors. So most importantly, we have to talk about the challenges of bringing Aslan, the talking lion, to the screen. But if I say that he is voiced by the very familiar British actor Ronald Pickup, you'll probably recognise the voice. I believe it was Liam Neeson in the movies, which we'll mention briefly in our next episode. But here, Ronald Pickup as the reassuring and commanding voice of Aslan.
Yes, you want a very good actor and someone who is a very solid performer to take that up, because there's so much in the voice. And casting Ronald Pickup, I think, was wonderful. He's a very good choice for that voice.
Then, of course, we've mentioned the White Witch, the villain of the piece, played by Barbara Kellerman, who we'd just been talking about not long ago in 1990. A very different performance here. This is, you know, a performance for children's television, a much more sort of theatrical performance as the Wicked White Witch. And Barbara Kellerman will also appear in the later two series. She'll play the Hag in Prince Caspian and the fabulously titled Lady of the Green Kirtle in The Silver Chair. And, you know, there is, I know, always some debate as to whether these are all aspects of the White Witch throughout the history of Narnia. So having the same actress play them, interesting anyway. But there she is, very different to Deli Lomax from 1990.
Yeah, she gives us some very big performances in this, for sure.
And along the way, as we've said, we're going to encounter far too many characters for us to mention. But what is interesting is you'll see very recognisable actors and you'll hear very recognisable voices. And there's a couple of favourites that we've picked out who are going to turn up in later series, Brian.
Yeah, we have fairly early roles for Warwick Davis as Reepa Cheep the Mouse in Prince Caspian and The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, and later as Glimfeather the Owl in The Silver Chair. So some nice little performances from him there. And then Puddle Glum in The Silver Chair, played by none other than the Fourth Doctor himself, Tom Baker. And we have quite a nice, appropriately big performance from Tom Baker there.
Yes, you sense he's having great fun. We'll talk about it in the next episode when we get to The Silver Chair. But you do feel that Tom Baker likes the source material and is enjoying himself.
Again, like having Ronald Pickup, it's a great choice for casting, you know, giving someone who can really embrace that character. So moving on, the second serial actually covers two books, Prince Caspian and The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, produced as one long serial in 1989. The first two episodes cover Prince Caspian and the other four cover The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. And we still have those four Pevensey siblings, the four children from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. there to help restore the rightful Prince Caspian to his throne and to restore freedom to the talking animals who have gone into hiding. And there's also this idea that a couple of characters are trying to resurrect the White Witch who fell in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And our characters need to prevent that as well.
And then we get, I think that's our last viewing of Peter and Susan as we move on to the Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
It is?
It is, yes. As we move on to the Voyage of the Dawn Treader story, when Lucy and Edmund, and also their rather annoying cousin Eustace, useless Eustace, are somehow transported in through a magical picture of a Narnian ship, the Dawn Treader of the title. And here they find the older King Caspian and the dashing mouse character Reaper Cheep, as we've said, played by Warwick Davis. And they're on a quest to find some old faithful friends of Caspian's father, some missing lords. And again, we're going to get more of the usual wonders of Narnia. We've got the talking animals. We've got the magical creatures. If you know the story, you'll be familiar with the fact that poor old Eustace finds himself transformed into a dragon for a while. So we get a depiction of a dragon in this second series from 1989.
And of course, we have Aslan involved, as always. And King Caspian is now played by a young Samuel West, which, again, some lovely casting in some of these.
Yes, he's been on Big Finish recently, I believe, hasn't he?
He has. He's done a number of things for Big Finish. And we, of course, saw him for British Invaders in Random Quest, starred in that John Wyndham adaptation. But yeah, a highly acclaimed actor there at this point.
Yes, and another early role here for him. And as you say, yeah, gone on to great stuff. And I'd forgotten about the Random Quest connection. Yeah, well done. So it's time to turn from the two first serials to our production notes. A fair bit to talk about here, actually, Brian.
Absolutely. C.S. Lewis lived from 1898 to 1963. He was a don at both Oxford and Cambridge universities. And as is often noted, he was a friend of J.R.R. Tolkien, who wrote Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and the other Middle-earth books. Those two authors were a member of a writing club called the Inklings Club that is well-remembered for that reason. Lewis is also known for his religious writings, his science fiction, and of course for the Chronicles of Narnia. And he felt that fiction should include specific allegories to other things, where Tolkien disagreed and Tolkien felt things should be more generic and evil depicted, should be able to represent any evil, not just a specific thing, for instance. And the Chronicles of Narnia is well known for its Christian allegory, which is quite prominent on a number of occasions.
That's very interesting. I mean, obviously, it's fascinating that they were contemporaries and they were both creating these magical worlds of their own and going about it in a different fashion. Interesting in a way, I suppose, because I know that with the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings films, there's quite a lot been made of the allegorical features that that perhaps Jackson put in there. But yeah, okay, fascinating stuff. The Inklings Club, how remarkable that must have been. So the first book to be published was, of course, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, which was published in 1950. I hadn't realised this, but it was dedicated to Lewis's own daughter, Lucy. And, of course, there is the character Lucy breaking through into Narnia by herself, the first of the children to do so. And he published a further six books in the series over the next 6 years. So there's a total of seven. The series that we're discussing cover four of those. I know that the chronology of Narnia suggests that you probably don't read the books in publication order and that there are different reading orders suggested. I gather that discussion can at times be a little bit controversial, Brian. I think most of us begin with The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, which is possibly the easiest introduction to Narnia itself.
Yes, in the original publication order, it's actually the first four books that we're talking about here that were covered in the BBC series. But there was a later statement by C.S. Lewis about reading them in a different chronological order. So depending which set of books you're looking at, there is the sort of chronological order that was introduced later, or there is the original publication order, which the BBC adaptations really followed that original publication order with the covering those first four.
Okay, well, let's get to the BBC and the late 80s. And in fact, just go back a little bit earlier first and note that the BBC had award-winning success with their adaptation of John Masefield's The Box of Delights, a Christmas classic. You'll have to go all the way back to British Invaders episodes 5 and 6 for that one, when it was yourself and Xander talking about that, Brian.
Yes, we covered that more than 10 years ago now. Lovely little, again, classic children's literature adaptation with Patrick Troughton in it, the Second Doctor himself. So, yeah, that was quite a neat production. And of all the things we've covered, that probably is the closest in tone and feel to the BBC's Chronicles of Narnia. Producer Paul Stone and script editor and writer Alan Seymour acquired the rights to adapt the Chronicles of Narnia, and they chose those first four novels, which connect to each other quite well, as the ones that they would adapt. For The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which clearly would be their first adaptation, they brought in Marilyn Fox to direct it, who had directed Codename Icarus for ITV, which we've covered, and would go on to direct Five Children and It, which is another sort of children's classic.
Yes, absolutely. It's the BBC, it's Sunday Tea Times, and these classic pieces of children's literature. And as well as, you know, the writing and direction, I should mention the music for the Chronicles of Narnia, composed by Geoffrey Bergen, best remembered, I suppose, for television for his famous score for Brideshead Revisited, perhaps well known to us on British Invaders for being the regular series composer on the BBC's A Ghost Story for Christmas. And here, his theme for the Chronicles of Narnia, just hearing the music alone, may be enough to whisk you back to the late 80s and watching this show as a child or with children. It's quite atmospheric music and very familiar, I think.
Yes, it's a lovely score, and I think very well judged to the content and the production they were doing.
Of course, with Narnia, we've got to address the big question, which is how does a 1980s BBC show with not a limitless budget, how do they depict talking animals, magical creatures, fauns, satyrs, giants, centaurs? And of course, how are they going to do the big talking lion himself? And it's interesting because they've chosen a sort of combination approach on the BBC. There's a number of different techniques they use, Brian.
Yes, that's right. They have actors in suits. They have cutting together to match things with centaurs, where they're using a composite image of a horse and a person. They have some props and things representing giant tools, and, you know, the giant's done with some nice composite work there. They do this combination for Aslan, where they have two men in a suit for the body of the lion, and a large animatronic head that I imagine was controlled by remote control, sort of attached to the front of it, so they could do facial expressions with it. And you have the calm voice of Ronald Pickup nicely matched into that.
And I have to say that Aslan, actually, I think, is a bit of a triumph for the BBC and the various sort of costuming and effects department. You know, the suit does look very uncomfortable, but the head is good, and they can't quite manage the sort of lip sync, but it does look very convincing. And I think, as we'll discuss next time, I thought of, you know, I love a practical effect, so I think it stands up quite well against the film's versions and the CGI, which we'll get much later.
Yeah, this was a big show for the BBC, and while certainly not unlimited budget, it did have a pretty reasonable budget, considering, and they were able to do some pretty big things for this.
Interestingly, I found it's the cartoon overlays of sort of magical creatures that have suffered the most over the years. And I also noticed that as we get to the second and third series, that they seem to largely drop those. So maybe I think the BBC realised they weren't quite so successful, and that actors and the animatronic Aslan and various clever bits of filming were more effective.
Yeah, they did that mostly for the flying creatures in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. They didn't do as many flying creatures aside from the owls, which were done differently in later ones. But yeah, it's very clear that you're looking at something different. How well it works, I think, is maybe up for debate, but it definitely doesn't integrate as well and look the same as the other sort of live-action elements.
Okay, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. They've also got a dragon to do. In fact, there's a couple of dragons. I think there's one in the second serial and one in the third serial. And that, again, it's a practical effect, and I think that's quite fun as well.
Yes, those they were able to work with quite well, that's true. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe was broadcast 5:40 p.m. on Sunday, starting on November 13th of 1988. And of course, it came back November 1989 with the second serial, which incorporated both Prince Caspian and the Voyage of the Dawn Treader. Then November 1990 with the Silver Chair.
And I should perhaps mention that I've just checked that the director Alex Kirby takes over for the second and third series. Obviously, it's Alan Seymour throughout with the writing and Paul Stone producing, I guess. That's a very comfortable pre-Christmas slot for the BBC, you know, to have that every November in the schedules and the run-up to Christmas. It no doubt contributes to the classic feel of the show and to its reputation. And it's no surprise, I guess, if you look at what went into making these serials, that they were nominated for several BAFTAs and even Emmys. You know, it does, particularly on this side of the Atlantic, Brian, it has a terrific reputation.
Yes, for sure. And particularly The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. That has to be a sort of pre-Christmas, you know, Christmas season kind of show. It's definitely tied to that season, with the idea of it being always winter but never Christmas in Narnia.
And of course, Father Christmas himself makes an appearance and gives the children their famous sort of special items, which of course you need on a magical quest.
Of course. So we should talk availability for this.
Okay, so this is one that's going to be fairly easy to get hold of, I think, pretty much wherever you are. Here in Region 2 in the UK, I've been looking at a 4-disc box set from 2005. So the first 3 discs are the 3 serials we're talking about. And then on the 4th disc, you get a number of extras, interviews with the cast as they were then, interviews with the cast now, some behind-the-scenes stuff, some Blue Peter features, quizzes, costume design, quite a number of special features. I have to say, I've only looked at a couple of the interviews, so I can't tell you too much about those. But anyway, that rather nice box set is an £8 bargain on Amazon at the moment. And I noticed that there are earlier DVD sets on Amazon Marketplace which seem to be even cheaper. I don't know about the extra features on those, but anyway, certainly easy and cheap to get hold of here in Region 2.
Does that set have the stories in the original 25-minute episodes as separate episodes?
It does, yes. They're all 25-minute episodes with titles and credits.
Very nice. Over here in Region 1, there is a Region 1 DVD set, which is selling for about $30 on Amazon.com. I believe it may be out of print now, but it is out there. And the Region 2 import is selling for about $8. Now, I do have to say that Region 1 version that I've been looking at has each of the stories edited into a long movie version. Now for the middle serial, they did do a separate one for Prince Caspian and Voyage of the Dawn Treader, but you have two episodes edited into one, and then four episodes edited into one, and the others, they do all six into one, which I think is unfortunate. I think it really does work better as the separate episodes. So if you can get that Region 2 import and you can play it, that is probably a better option, because I think it is a better way to watch this.
Oh, okay. I hadn't realized that was the case in Region 1. Yes, certainly on the Region 2 disc, it's the individual episodes all the way through.
It may be the earlier discs that you were referencing, the earlier versions of it. One of them may be the same as the Region 1 version with the edited in movie versions.
Okay, something to watch out for. So that'll do us for the first two serials. Come back next time as we get into the third series, The Silver Chair, and Tom Baker will marsh wiggle his way to the very Silver Chair of the title, or towards. So we got quite a bit to talk about still in the next episode, Brian.
Absolutely. And we will do some of our typical reviews and recommendations, as always. And there's more to talk about in terms of Narnia and other related things. Plenty more to talk about, for sure. Until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com, or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group. And we would love to hear about your thoughts about the Chronicles of Narnia from the BBC and the various other versions that are out there in the original books. We always have some enjoyable conversations going on there.
Great stuff. Or come to the Voice of Geeks Network, vognetwork.com, and listen to British Invaders on Mondays and Tuesdays, but also all their other shows. British Invaders, we are proud members of the Voice of Geeks.
So thank you for listening. This is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, and until next time, and that silver chair, it's Eamon in England also signing off.